Welcome back to 40 AM in 5, a download of 40 AM LLC, recorded at 7 PM Eastern Time on Sunday, November 17th. I'm Chris Bohm, and this is our weekly selection of tech sector and related global news and policy highlights from the past week. Coming up, The Hill newspaper reports that the White House may be considering a civilian to replace General Alexander as head of the NSA. The BBC confirms that Facebook is taking steps to protect users who may have been impacted by the recent hack of Adobe usernames and passwords. Sandvine reports that BitTorrent traffic may be on the decline in the U.S. ZDNet reports that Google plans to invest 450 million euro in its Finnish data center. Verizon, AT&T, and others are making it easier to connect with family and friends in the Philippines and for customers in the U.S. to donate to the relief effort. The Pew Internet and American Life Project studies those choosing not to connect. And Janet Yellen takes her first steps in the Senate toward expected confirmation as the next chair of the Fed. And some notes from us on calendar items for the upcoming week. But first, as reported by the Hill newspaper early last week, the White House may be looking to appoint a civilian to replace General Keith Alexander as head of the U.S. National Security Agency. According to The Hill, no decision has been made as yet, but officials are considering a list of potential candidates and a position description, as the White House would only name a civilian to lead the NSA if it also intends to split the role of NSA chief from the role of head of Cyber Command. Alexander has been the head of the NSA since 2005, and also in charge of Cyber Command since 2010, but is expected to resign in the spring of 2014. According to The Hill, appointing a civilian to lead the NSA and splitting off the Cyber Command could help increase transparency and oversight as the NSA works to rebuild trust with the public. Also, the Senate would most likely have confirmation power over a civilian appointee, a power over the NSA nomination that it currently does not have. The BBC, following up on a blog written by Brian Krebs this past week, has confirmed that Facebook has taken action to protect users who may have been compromised by the recent hack of Adobe login and account details. As the BBC reports, Adobe has acted to encrypt passwords, but not password hints and usernames. Diapers.com and Soap.com are reportedly among the online retailers trying to pinpoint possible members who use the same email password combinations as those impacted by the Adobe hack. Potentially impacted Facebook members are presented with a message saying that although Facebook was not directly impacted by the incident, your Facebook account may be at risk because you use both the same email account and password combination in both places. Users are then taken through a few questions to confirm the user identity, and until the users are finished, as a precaution, no one can see them on Facebook. Facebook added in the report made by the BBC that this is not the first time it's come across the need for this type of precaution, adding that they've gotten more efficient and effective at protecting user accounts that may have been impacted this way due to username and password duplication. Sandvine, which recently published its twice-yearly Global Internet Phenomena report, cites that BitTorrent traffic is on the decline in the U.S. for the first time. The report notes that as a share of total internet traffic, BitTorrent traffic, some of which is composed of pirated media, music, television, and films, has fallen to 7%, down 20% in the last 6 months. When Sandvine began its report 10 years ago, BitTorrent traffic accounted for 60% of the total. But in Europe, BitTorrent traffic is on the rise, with half of all uploaded traffic attributed to the BitTorrent protocol. With some users resorting to Tor and other darknets, as well as encrypted digital lockers, it's difficult to track how many U.S. users may simply be foregoing BitTorrent for another avenue of access. However, experts are citing the Sandvine report as a likely indicator that access to legitimate content services and dynamic pricing models may finally be having a measurable impact on the use of such protocols for pirated content. In an article on these issues this past week by the BBC, it was cited that in the UK, 28 sites have been to date blocked by court orders by rights holders and many of these use BitTorrent protocol. In the U.S., the Copyright Holders Alert System was launched in March, a cooperative endeavor between rights holders and the ISPs. Dubbed the Six Strikes, the system essentially permits users six chances, through a series of escalating warnings and messages, to stop infringing on copyrights before user bandwidth is throttled or a site is blocked. ZDNet reporter Joe Best revealed earlier this week that Google is investing as much as 450 million euro to expand its existing European data center in the Finnish town of Hamina. The data center was opened in 2011 after Google bought the property from a paper company and invested 200 million euro to convert it to a data center. The move is one of many made by the giants of the internet aimed at bringing internet content and resources closer to users. As reported on by ZDNet, the Hamina facility is one of three data centers run by Google in Europe, the others being in Saint-Ghislain, Belgium, and Dublin, Ireland. The Finnish data center uses seawater from the Bay of Finland for cooling and is powered by a 24-turbine wind farm located in the north of Sweden. As reported by Joe Best, the latest investment will increase the data center's size approximately threefold. Yahoo Finance is reporting that Verizon has decided to waive charges on residential landline calls to the Philippines through December 7th for customers attempting to contact friends and family there in the wake of last week's typhoon. Wireless customers will also be able to send text to the Philippines as long as they are not under prepaid plans. The exception for customers is being made retroactive to November 8th when the typhoon hit. AT&T is similarly offering wireless customers unlimited calls and texts through November 30th, with U-verse customers receiving up to 60 minutes of direct dial calling, also retroactive to November 8th. Apple is reportedly also permitting its customers to donate to the relief effort through the American Red Cross via its iTunes online store. In addition, Verizon, Sprint, AT&T, and T-Mobile are each letting people send texts to donate $10 to select charities, waiving the usual text messaging charges and any processing fees. According to a study released in September by the Pew Internet and American Life Project, about 15% of Americans older than the age of 18 don't use the internet, with an additional 9% of Americans who do use the internet, but only outside the home. These and other statistics were discussed in a piece written last week for the Washington Post by Andrita Pearson, highlighting that the percentage of Americans who don't use the net, although small, make up a not insignificant segment of the population given how much of daily life is connected in some way or another to the digital economy. Internet service provided via broadband, cable, fiber, DSL, and other high-speed networks has increased significantly over the past two decades, and according to Lauren Strickling, head of the Commerce Department's National Telecommunications and Information Administration, cited in the Post article, well over 90% of U.S. households are either wired for high-speed broadband or can get it via high-speed wireless access. Most recent NTIA figures, however, from 2011, show that take-up of internet at these speeds runs around 69%. According to the Washington Post story and Catherine Zucker, author of the Pew study, those Americans who remain disconnected are typically older. As of May, more than 49% of non-users were older than 65. But surprisingly, cost was not necessarily the reason. 34% of those offline responded that they saw the internet as simply not relevant to them, while a slightly smaller group, or 32%, cited either frustrations with the technology or fears regarding hackers or loss of privacy. For Larry Strickling of the NTIA, according to the Post, this leaves this dwindling population at a decided disadvantage, particularly with regard to jobs. 73% of those unemployed reported going online to look for work. Lee Rainey, director of the Pew Internet Project, was reported in the Post to have said at a recent forum that, apart from the importance to job searches, reaching out to family members and friends in faraway places is also increasingly becoming a very important aspect of feeling connected to communities. The Pew study, entitled Who's Not Online and Why, is available at Pew Internet, PewInternet.org. Janet Yellen, President Obama's nominee to chair the Federal Reserve Board, appeared before the Senate Banking Committee on Thursday for a hearing on her confirmation. A committee vote on Yellen's nomination could come as early as this week, according to the Washington Post, and thinking is that the panel is likely to send her nomination to the full Senate. A key issue that she addressed in her testimony before the committee was the issue of financial institution dominance, dubbed too big to fail, which she said has to be among the most important goals of the post-crisis period. She called too big to fail damaging, creating a threat to financial stability, and in her view, gives some advantage to large banking firms over small ones. Yellen also smartly defended Fed policy on economic stimulus through its bond buying program, but taking care not to say when the program might end, adding that the Fed has a variety of supervisory tools, both micro and macro, that we can use. Committee Chairman Senator Tim Johnson set the tone for the session, saying that Dr. Yellen has proved through her extensive and impressive record in public service and academia that she is the most qualified to be the next chair of the Federal Reserve. With the withdrawal roughly 2 months ago of Larry Summers, who had been the presumptive nominee of the White House at the time, the statement of unfailing support was important, but with Yellen's tenure in the number two position at the Fed, hardly needed to bolster her credibility as the top candidate. One issue not mentioned in the hearing was the fact that Janet Yellen will be the first woman to hold a position as chair of the Fed. And although much has been made in the press over the past months about this possibility, and the undeniable accomplishment that this would be for women, in the end, the fact that it was not brought up in the hearing perhaps signals what may have long been known and respected, that as perhaps the most qualified person in the modern era to lead the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen is simply the best candidate there is, regardless of her gender. And here are some notes on some calendar items for the upcoming week to consider. In the U.S. House of Representatives, on the 19th, which is Tuesday, at 1:30 p.m., will be a hearing in the Committee on Judiciary, Subcommittee on the Courts, Intellectual Property, and the Internet. The hearing will be on the rise of innovative business models for content delivery methods in the digital age. On the 21st, at 10:30 a.m., will be a hearing of the Energy and Commerce Committee, Subcommittee on Communications and Technology, on oversight of FirstNet and the advancement of public safety wireless communications. In the U.S. Senate, on Tuesday, November 19th, will be a Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs joint committee meeting with the Senate Committee on Finance to discuss present and future impact of virtual currency, taking place in the Dirksen Senate Office Building, room 538 at 3:30 p.m. And then on Wednesday, November 20th, will be a Senate Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship hearing to examine the Affordable Care Act implementation, focusing on how to achieve a successful rollout for small business exchanges, in the Russell Senate Office Building, room 428 at 2 p.m. In the European Parliament on Monday, November 18th, from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., will be a meeting of the Committee on Foreign Affairs. Part of the agenda will be a consideration of a draft working document on foreign policy aspects of the inquiry into electronic mass surveillance of EU citizens. And then from 7:30 to 9:45 p.m. on Monday, November 18th, will be a Civil Liberties Committee inquiry onto mass surveillance of EU citizens, the 11th hearing in this series, also in Strasbourg. And that's all we have for you this week. You have been listening to 40A&M in 5, a production of 40A&M LLC. For more information and for our terms of use, visit 40a-m.com. All stories for this week's podcast were reported by at least two online or print news sources or taken directly from relevant releases, with the exception of specific reporting highlighted from The New York Times, The Hill newspaper, the BBC, ZDNet, and The Washington Post. Thank you for joining us again today. 40A&M in 5 will be back with you next week on Monday, November 24th. Until then, make this week and every week one to remember. And bye for now. Thank you.